Demons running around in my head, and they feed on insecurities I have. Won't you lay your
chapter 7
healing hands on my chest, that your ritual clean, soak the ropes with your holy water.
You could still stay. I really can't, Obi-Wan says, smiling to soften the edge of his words. The Jedi Order isn't perfect or infallible, but it is where my path lies. The Force has been singing the truth of this to Obi-Wan for the 2 days it's been since Death Watch's attack on the market and Quinlan's arrival. The Force has, in fact, been prodding at Obi-Wan impatiently to get a move on, to return Satine to her people and leave Mandalore. To go where, Obi-Wan isn't sure. He's been having dreams, visions, perhaps, of numerous planets, and feels pulled in numerous directions. Pajal, Naboo, Teth, Dalinor, Telos IV. Perhaps Master Qui-Gon, with his deeper connection to the Living Force, will better be able to determine their next step once Obi-Wan is reunited with him. Obi-Wan has privately noted that it is interesting that in all these dream visions the Force has shared with him, Obi-Wan never sees himself as more than a handful of years older than he is now. It's almost as though his path is set, but only for the next few years, and then, well, who can truly know? The universe is vast, and there are infinite moving parts, and Obi-Wan is just a Padawan. Jango heaves a sigh at Obi-Wan's statement and looks over his shoulder to where Satine and Quinlan, the latter with baby Cal strapped securely to his chest, are standing by Quinlan's stolen ship, bickering over the route they should take across the continent. A group of true Mandalorians is hovering nearby, doing a poor job of acting like they're not trying to work up the courage to propose to Quinn before he leaves. It has been highly amusing to watch Quinn dazzle the hot Mondo Ade. No one can truly be prepared for Quinlan Vos, least of all when he's got a receptive audience to play to, and Jango's people were all too willing to listen to Quinn's perhaps overblown tales of danger and espionage and bravery, and then all too willing to indulge Quinn in endless spars yesterday, and then to introduce him to Tingalar of gradually increasing spice levels, and then... and then, and then. Quinn's been turning down adoption offers left and right. Obi-Wan has two, in fact, the first of which surprised him so much that he stumbled through declining with no grace at all and ended up apologizing profusely. It's breaking Miles's heart to lose you, Hal, and his new best friend all on the same day, Jango says. Obi-Wan snorts and turns to look. Sure enough, Miles is among the throng of would-be suitors, egging them on shamelessly for his own amusement. Miles and Quinlan discovered at some point yesterday that they're the exact same brand of reckless in a spar, and then spent a good long while holed up discussing the finer points of the information trade. And Obi-Wan's fairly certain the universe will never be the same for the two of them having become friends. He's not losing us, Obi-Wan says. You have our comm codes. You know where we live.
Your Senate is still refusing to recognize true Mandalorians as a valid faction of government and people, Jango says, blunt. If the Mandalore tried to drop by Coruscant for a visit, they'd shoot me out of the sky.
We're going to change that, Obi-Wan reminds him. You've heard Satine and I's plan. You've agreed to it. It will take time to get all the pieces in place, but the Senate will change their minds and endorse the new governmental structure here. And in the meantime, are you truly expecting me to believe that you and Miles aren't clever enough to sneak onto Coruscant?
Jango lights up at the challenge. Think we can make it in time for Cal's first birthday?
Obi-Wan drags his eyes up and down Jango's body, assessing. I don't know. Can you? Heat builds between them, and Obi-Wan is thrown back to the first day they met. The feel of Jango's hands on his skin, their bodies pressed together, possessive words spoken intimately.
The only reason I'm letting you go is because I know Quinlan and your other friends are watching your back, Miles announces, sauntering over after Quinn firmly but kindly turns Silas down. And because we have contingency plans in place to protect you from your master's bullshit now. And also because I respect your autonomy, I suppose. Obi-Wan grabs on to the change in topics with both hands. For the last time, Miles, Master Qui-Gon isn't... Wait, what? What contingency plans?
Can't tell you. You're an InfoSec risk, Miles says.
Obi-Wan squints at him. I want you to be lying and not truly believe that, but I also don't want to find the scar of it on my body later. Curious. It's going to take me some time to get used to this.
It's very helpful for figuring out if your soulmate's been lying about enjoying your cooking, Jango says,
popping off his chest plate and starting to ruck his shirt up.
What was it you said about my Udge cake again, Miles? Let's check the record.
Obes, Quinlan hollers, hand cupped over the one of Cal's ears that isn't pressed to his chest. They all agreed, begrudgingly, on Jango and Miles's part, that the safest place for Cal while he's still so young is the temple. There are a few Force-sensitive beings on Mandalore, but none of them high-level enough to be able to train Cal, and untrain younglings of Cal's strength. Obi-Wan can feel Cal's presence in the Force like a beacon, tend to be a danger to themselves and others. Cal will be given the choice, once he's older and has better control, to either stay with the Jedi or go another direction. If he chooses to leave, Obi-Wan will see him safely into Miles and Jango's hands. He promised, and the words did not scar.
We've gotta go if we're gonna make it across the waste by sundown, Quinlan goes on. Stop making your Mando strip for you in public and get over here.
There's a sordid tittering at Quinlan's blatant disrespect, ranging from amused and impressed to offended. Not everyone in Jango's compound has been welcoming of Obi-Wan and Quinlan's presence. Not everyone supports their Mandalore having a Jedi for a soulmate. They're being careful to keep it quiet, only discussing it out of earshot, but Obi-Wan can feel a few distinct sources of distrust and resentment. Speaking of beings who radiate distrust and resentment, tell Arla I said goodbye, please, Obi-Wan says. Jango's sister is being held in a private room deeper in the compound under armed guard, having multiple sessions a day with a healer specializing in complex trauma. Obi-Wan had probed gently at her Force signature to see if there was anything he could do to help. His formal training in Force healing is minimal, but he learned quite a bit about helping beings process battlefield-sustained and adjacent mental wounds during his time on Melodadon. But the maelstrom surrounding her mind was far too convoluted for him to even begin untangling. Arla had not responded well.
She tried to kill you, Miles says.
So did Jango, Obi-Wan says. I can't argue with what seems to be a genetic predisposition to wanting to murder me as a first impression.
It's not genetic, Quinlan shouts. You have that effect on everyone.
Jango pinches the bridge of his nose.
If I asked you to stop trying to bring violence down on your own head, not always. Don't look at me like that. Just when you don't have us or Vos or your other friends around, would you consider it?
I don't do it on purpose, Obi-Wan protests, then hastens to add so he doesn't leave any additional scars. Most of the time. On occasion, provoking a heated response is the most efficient way to
get yourself taken prisoner by Death Watch after you called Pre Vizsla a demagogue hut on.
I stand by that statement, Obi-Wan says, mild as the breeze.
Of course you do, Miles says fondly.
He plants his hands on Obi-Wan's shoulders and turns him around, starts marching him towards the ship.
Got everything you need. I triple-check the bag we packed for Cal, but there's...
Obi-Wan plants his heels, turns to face his soulmates, considers the implications of what he's about to say. The Force doesn't scream at him to stop, so he opens his mouth. If you find another Death Watch camp where children are being held, you could calm me.
Obi-Wan's still wearing their vambraces. No one's mentioned it. Not Obi-Wan, not Jango, not Miles. Silas and Quinlan and Vontae and Midge have all made meaningful eyes at Obi-Wan's forearms. But no one's actually brought up that twice now. Twice. It's been 2 days. Obi-Wan has taken the vambraces off to shower and sleep, and then put them back on. It's not the same as holding a Redura ceremony, and it's not the same as Obi-Wan having his own armor. None of the ways Obi-Wan upholds the Rezzel Narrae have been intentional. But this, rallying to the cause of Mandalore when called upon, is the last of the actions he hasn't already satisfied incidentally, and Miles knows Obi-Wan knows what he's doing by making this offer. Obi-Wan knows the Rezzel Narrae, after all. I may not be able to drop whatever I'm doing to assist, Obi-Wan continues, clearly weighing each word carefully before he speaks. Not for several years, at least. I have a duty to my order, and the missions I am assigned. But if possible, I would like to assist, if I can. If there are children in danger, or if you or your people are in need. Miles is willing to leave it at that. Miles is more than willing to leave it at that, because this is already so much more than he thought they'd get at this point. Miles can be patient. Miles can give Obi-Wan the space and time he needs. Miles can. Jango and Miles are very different people. Jango takes nothing on faith and doesn't like having to read between the lines. He asks, point blank, "You'll come if we call." Miles appreciates the we instead of the I. He also, upon further reflection and knowing Jango well enough to read the tension and hint of fear in his shoulders, probably could have predicted this. Miscommunication, assuming they all understood each other, leaving important things unspoken, it almost wrecked them. Jango isn't the sort to repeat mistakes, especially not when the stakes are this high. Obi-Wan must intuit some of that, too. He says, gently, holding eye contact with Jango, "If I can." The three of them wait for 1, 2, 3 beats, and then a small smile tugs at Jango's lips. He must not have felt a scar form. "It's good enough for now, I guess." "Only for now," Miles tags on, following as Obi-Wan starts towards the ship again. "If we don't hear from you regularly, or if Quinn says your master's carked up again, we're gonna come looking for you." "We're Mandalorians," Jango says, knowing exactly where Miles is going with this. "We bounty hunt if there's not enough fighting to keep us busy, and you and the Duchess are about to make fighting the war here a damn sight easier. Might get bored. Dust off those old skills." Obi-Wan lifts an eyebrow. "Are you saying you'll hunt me like a bounty if I don't come frequently enough?" Quinlan, mid-ducking into the ship, hoots a delighted laugh. Satine, already through into the ship's interior, sends them a scandalized look. "Sounds like a good time to me," Miles says, catching Obi-Wan's wrist and spinning him one last time so he can press the Jedi up against the side of the ship. Carefully, of course, and telegraphing his movements, and watching for any sign that Obi-Wan's uncomfortable. Obi-Wan certainly doesn't look uncomfortable. Obi-Wan looks. 2 against 1 is hardly a fair chase, their Jedi says, breathless. Jango crowds in close. "No one said anything about fair, Obi-Ka. I have a feeling we're going to need every advantage we can get to keep up with you." There's a flush to Obi-Wan's cheeks. Miles wants to bite it, lick it, something. He staves off the desire by running his free hand down Jango's chest, still exposed since he hasn't clipped the plate back into place yet. Their Jedi follows every bit of the movement with his eyes, gaze going darker the lower Miles' hand dips. "I wonder what you'd do when we caught you, huh?" "I," Obi-Wan says, squirming but not trying to slink away through the escape route Miles is very consciously leaving him. People are looking. Miles, Jango." People are not, in fact, looking. Jango and Miles's people have all beat strategic retreats, well accustomed by now to behavior like this from their Mandalore. Miles wouldn't say Django has an exhibitionist streak, exactly. It's more that he just doesn't give a shit if other people he trusts, at least, see him in intimate moments. But then, Miles thinks back to that first day they met Obi-Wan. Ben had walked in on Django strangling Miles, sharing a deep kiss that Miles had been thinking about relocating to a bed, and Django hadn't exactly moved away with any sort of urgency. And then he had moved, and it had been to press his body along Obi-Wan's back and take off Obi-Wan's shirt, putting him on display for Miles. Django might, in fact, have a bit of an exhibitionist streak, at least where his soulmates are concerned. And Miles might really enjoy watching, if he's being honest with himself, remembering the way he'd felt seeing Ben respond to Django's touch, acknowledging the way he feels now as Obi-Wan bites his lip while Miles touches Django. Obi-Wan is pressing his palms against the ship almost desperately, like he's holding himself back. The two of you are going to be the death of me, aren't you?
Tell us to stop, and we'll stop, Miles says, voice hitting a register that very few people except Django have heard.
Tell us you're not interested, or you need time, or anything, and we'll back off.
Tell us the idea of us chasing you across the universe isn't making you light up inside, Django murmurs,
apparently still taking that no more leaving important things unspoken lesson to heart, or, more likely, using it as an excuse to make their Jedi blush even harder.
You're our soulmate. It probably does to you what it does to us. But tell us it doesn't, and we won't come after you. Might be more satisfying to let you come to us, even.
Miles drags the fingers he's had playing on Django's lower belly around back, out of Obi-Wan's line of sight, just to let his imagination have a little fun.
What do you think, Share? Think we could get him to beg for us?
Django sucks in a breath. Obi-Wan lets out this whine of desire that Miles wants to eat.
Okay, wrap it up, put him away, Quinlan says, poking his head out of the hatch.
The baby carrier is gone from his chest. Cal must be secured for the trip.
There are impressionable kiddos around, and we really do need to get going, and, oh sweet force, Obes, you've turned me into the responsible one. How criffing dare you?
Wonders truly never cease, Obi-Wan snarks, sliding along the ship and giving himself some breathing room from Django and Miles. He turns to them a final time, an unreadable expression on his face.
Do take care of yourselves, won't you?
We take care of each other, Miles says, batting down the arousal that just got cut off at the knees, letting it simmer into something more like affection. And you're included in that now, if you'll let us. Obi-Wan searches their faces, and probably their force auras or whatever. He smiles.
If you can catch me, I'll consider it.
He's gone before the next heartbeat, vanished in the ship and the hatch sealing up tight behind him. Django and Miles step back, out of the interceptor's splash zone, and watch it, him, lift and speed away. When the ship is a speck in the sky, Miles says,
That was an invitation, right?
Of the two of them, Django's the one who can tell when a soulmate scar appears on his body without looking. And Django says,
Well, it certainly wasn't a lie.
The end. Author's notes. 8 years later, a shady character calling himself Darth Tyrannus offers Django 20 million credits in exchange for serving as the genetic template for an army of clones. Django, who is currently on a ship with Miles, Obi-Wan's almost but not quite dead master, a 9-year-old Obi-Wan says has a higher midichlorian count than any Jedi in existence, and said 9-year-old's mom because Django and Miles, A,
do not abide slavery, and B, are definitely not separating a kid from their parent if they can help it.
Hey, Obika, come here and look at this message for a minute.
Obi-Wan, who was very glad Qui-Gon's not dead and eternally grateful that Miles and Jango were able to divert when they got his distress call from Naboo, but utterly exhausted and more than a little unsettled by the Force supernova disguised as a cute kid who's been following him around. What the entire fuck is this? Miles, who was mildly salty that this whole Naboo debacle delayed he and Jango's trip to Coruscant to officially adopt and take custody of Cal in the Republic's eyes, but also he wouldn't have changed a single thing about what happened because Annika is curled up asleep on his chest, so it seems like Miles is going to get some sort of bonus child slash little brother slash nephew slash assistant in his endless prank war with Quinlan out of this. Do we get to kill another Sith? Because I feel like we're going to get to kill another Sith. Shmi Skywalker, who has no idea what's going on, but is willing to follow the young space wizard and his bounty hunter boyfriends anywhere, so long as they keep protecting Annie and letting her pitch in while they burn slaving rings to the ground. I'm in. The end for real this time.
Oh, I should be thinking about nothing else when I'm with you. Ooh, with you. Ooh, oh, oh.
Your mind exists somewhere altogether different. It lives in a world where feelings simply cannot be defined.